TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. In Cleveland this week, I am lucky enough to be joined by Spencer Davies of Basketball Insiders. With the Cavs taking on the Wolves in Minnesota later this weekend, figured it'd be a good idea to sit down and have a chat about what the Cavs are doing, what the Wolves are doing, what the rest of the NBA is doing. A nice little Christmas time episode. Spencer, how are you today, sir?
I'm great because it's like 50 degrees outside and it's going to be like 60 for Christmas. So it's like, this is not usual.
It is warm here for Cleveland. Last time I was in town, it was also warm earlier this month, and that was when Minneapolis got hit with like the first snowstorm. Like they got 8 inches of snow the last time I was here. I'm kind of glad I missed that one. But I think it's like 30-ish in Minneapolis. Not supposed to snow this week, but it is really nice here right now. It's certainly nice for December 24th. There's no question about that. Also, kind of nice lately are the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've won 3 straight as we're recording this. On the opposite end of the spectrum are the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have lost 11 straight now after they fell to the Golden State Warriors last night. But I wanted to dive into Cleveland a little bit here because they were a team that got off to not a great start. Well, they got off to that decent start and then hit a rough patch in their schedule, and things seemed like they were spiraling out of control. Players anonymously hated John Beilein, and just everything that could go wrong was going wrong for the Cavs. What's this year been like, and how different has it been here?
I kind of call it year 1B of the rebuild because You had that post-LeBron first team, tried to keep around these extra pieces that were a part of a championship team, and then you ended up trading those away and then played a bunch of G Leaguers and 10-day contract guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's year 1A because Larry Drew was an interim coach after Tyronn Lue got fired
in. He was an interim voice.
All right, he was the voice until he got his money.
He was an interim voice.
But the second half of the season was really essentially about Colin Sexton's development and Channing Frye's send-off.
Yeah.
That was it. This year, there was a little bit, I don't want to say more expectation, because the outside expectation was actually that they were going to be just as bad.
Yeah.
But the internal expectation was to see, okay, there's going to be some growth here. There's going to be some development, not only with these players that we brought in, these three rookies, I should say, one of them on the shelf, obviously, with Dylan Windler. But the development of the coaching staff as well. I mean, John Beilein making the jump from Michigan college to pro, somebody with 40 years plus of coaching experience itself. Lindsey Gottlieb being a part of that assistant staff. And then they brought in some veterans of assistantship like JB Bickerstaff.
Sure.
And Antonio Lang, you know, and then they kept around their player development staff of Mike Garrity and Dan Giroux. So it was a nice mix that they brought in, and they felt that they had some structure for once.
Yeah.
Something that they haven't paid attention to in past years, admittedly. When LeBron came back, they completely mortgaged the future and got rid of every piece of asset they had.
As they should. I mean, when LeBron is in town, you're in a title-contending window. You're a team that you can realistically look yourself in the mirror and say, we can win a championship. The minute LeBron James leaves to go somewhere else, you can't say that anymore. So that's the way it should be operated.
And it's tough because you're putting in such a difficult position, especially when those pieces clearly don't fit around LeBron like they did in 2017-18, and he had to go Super Saiyan in order to get them to the finals in the first place. But this year, just looking from an on-court perspective, it's been so up and down, but at the same time, something we were discussing when we were coming in here, the Cavs have had one of, if not the hardest schedules to date at this point.
I think that as we're recording this on the 24th, and both teams, I believe, play again before the Wolves and Cavs match up on Saturday night in Minnesota, the Cavs are 8-5 against teams below 500. That's how they're 9-21, I believe. They've really struggled against good teams, which, hey, a team that is starting 2 kids in the backcourt that can't legally buy alcohol yet is probably going to struggle at times against good competition.
And Danny, you're saying good teams. These are great teams they've been playing. Okay. Yeah. This will be the third time they'll take on the Celtics. They've taken on the Indiana Pacers 3 times. They've faced the Raptors. They faced the Dallas Mavericks twice. They've faced the Miami Heat 3 times. Like, these are not easy opponents that they've had to this point. And what I told everybody when they came back for this homestand before the holiday break, okay, you've got three teams. You've got the Hornets, the Grizzlies, and the Hawks. Mm-hmm. They should take two out of three out of that. No problem. Sure. Because these are teams that are closer to their level and where they are as a program currently. And that's not to take anything away from, you know, the Hornets or the Grizzlies. The Hawks obviously have struggled, but that's been because John Collins missed 25 games due to suspension. I mean, the Cavs are such an interesting enigma because they've been trying to incorporate these different lineups and also try to show trade value for everybody. Obviously, Jordan Clarkson just going to the Utah Jazz last night. Exactly a tip, by the way. Thanks for that, Kobe. Made that a little bit harder on us writers.
Yeah.
But it's been a weird kind of year just because they're trying to figure out these rotations on the fly. And again, John Beilein, first-year coach, trying to find what mixes the best, not only in five-man rotations, but who works together best as a pair, who works together best as a trio. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I think they're starting to find a little groove, not only as a coaching staff, but even the players as well.
I do think it's interesting their backcourt dynamic in Cleveland, because they've got a 19-year-old point guard and a 20-year-old shooting guard that I don't know what their roles are going to be in the future. I don't know if Colin Sexton is a long-term starter or if he's someone that's going to be best suited being a sixth man for the future. I don't know what Darius Garland's going to be, and that's coming from someone that was, I was really high on him in the draft. I thought that he was a really good player. I thought that the Cavs made a great pick, and I firmly believe that the reason the Wolves traded up from 11 to 6 was to draft Darius Garland. That's what my thinking was on draft night, that's the kid that they wanted, and they're still happy they got Jarrett Culver, don't get me wrong, but I think that they wanted to trade up for Garland. And I know in Cleveland that's been a bit of a slow process for him. He hasn't exactly gotten off to the brightest start to a career, but I still think that he's someone that's got a bright future. And even I know last night against Atlanta, he looked really good. And I do think we're going to start to see more games like that where it is, okay, this kid can play.
Well, what's allowed him to thrive as of late, especially in the last 2 weeks, is that John Beilein has this little rotation. So Colin Sexton and Darius Garland start with the other three, Osman, Love, and Thompson. And then midway through the first quarter, he pulls Darius Garland and puts Matthew Dellavedova in.
Mm-hmm.
So then those five are running. And then to start the second quarter, Darius Garland has been playing with the second unit.
Yeah.
So he's been playing with Kevin Porter Jr. And those two's dynamic just look like it's natural. They have been best friends for a long time here, and they got drafted, obviously, together here to Cleveland. And you can just see that they know what each other's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird just because they know, okay, it's my turn to do this. It's your turn to do that. Okay, we're going to get the other guys involved here. They're both very good playmakers. Darius' biggest problem so far has been getting stuck into the in-between areas.
Yeah.
And turning the ball over. Anytime that he runs a pick and roll, he gets blitzed, turnover, easy bucket on the other end. By playing with Kevin Porter Jr., Porter can even take some of those point guard-ish roles from him. That's not his position by any means, but he's more of a two-guard who is looking to playmake more than he is looking to score. Now, again, don't get me wrong, he's a hunter. He goes and gets his when he wants to.
Yeah.
But even those two, just even in the half court and in transition, especially as we saw last night, they scored the first 17 points of the fourth quarter for the Cavs.
That's not bad for two 19-year-olds.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And that is no disservice to Colin Sexton. I truly think that Kevin Porter Jr. will be the starting two guard for this Cavalier team in the future. I don't know if it's the near future or whatever yet, but I think that Garland and Porter are going to end up being those two. And then Colin Sexton's going to come off of your bench, sort of like a Lou Williams type of guy.
Or like Jordan Clarkson.
Or like a Jordan Clarkson. Yesterday. Yes, exactly. That's a good point. And speaking of Colin Sexton, he has just been on a roll here.
Yeah, he's been a couple times. He's been Player of the Week nominee in the Eastern Conference. He's had an under-the-radar nice young season so far.
He has. And again, I think that a lot of people don't understand that in a rebuild, you're not going to get sunshine and roses for the entirety of a season.
No, and I think that that's something a lot of people in Minnesota right now, to tie this back locally to the Wolves, is that a lot of people, fans of the team, are struggling with right now, because the Wolves got off to a 7-4 start and everything looked good, right? Oh, the bottom of the West is not nearly as strong as we thought it was going to be. It's not going to take 48 wins to get the eighth seed anymore. It might take like 41 or 42. Now the Wolves could do that. Started off 7-4 and then the bottom kind of fell out as people started to realize what they were doing and as they started to play Western Conference teams. They opened up their season with 6 straight games against the East. Started 7-4 through their first 11. Well, they're 4-16 against Western Conference opponents right now. 2 of those wins are against the Spurs. One of them's against the Warriors in overtime, and the other is a really good win at Utah. So they've really struggled against the West. That's why they're 10-19 now, as they've lost 11 straight. As we record this, it could be 12 straight on Thursday when they play Sacramento. That's what happens there. And people have kind of lost sight that this is year one for a totally new regime where there are not a lot of pieces in Minnesota, I think, that really fit what they want to do long term.
That's an interesting thought. And basically, from what I've been able to watch with the Wolves, it's been a lot of so they started the season and Andrew Wiggins got off to this amazing start. It seems like he's kind of tapered off a little bit here.
I think that there's been a bit of a fit issue with him. And so his grandmother passed away about a month ago now. And right before that is when he put together like a 6 or 7 game stretch where he was like averaging 30 points and 6 assists. You're like, yes, that is the guy the Wolves traded Kevin Love for. That is the guy right there. And since he came back, and Jeff Teague was battling an illness at the time when Andrew was going off, and then Andrew went away he missed a couple of games over the course of a weekend, and then he actually got sick, so I think he missed 3 straight games. Once he came back, Jeff Teague was back in the starting lineup, and things just didn't fit naturally. And I think that they've really struggled to find the right balance between having Andrew Wiggins actually play point guard and Andrew Wiggins being a secondary creator.
How has his ability been, though, to score the basketball this year and shoot? Because I feel like the games I've watched, he's actually improved as a three-point shooter.
He's improved in his shot selection. He's never been necessarily a bad three-point shooter, but he's improved in his shot selection. Okay. And that's the biggest thing, because what he would do is he would take endless amounts of 20-foot jumpers. Just he would say, hey, I'm going to step inside the three-point line and shoot. And he's also getting to the rim more than he has ever gotten in his career. And those are why he looks so much better. There for so long, Andrew Wiggins has just not been a player that's contributed to winning basketball. And obviously right now no one's contributing to winning basketball in Minnesota because they've lost 11 straight and they're 10-19. But in the same breath, Andrew Wiggins is no longer a minus player. At the very least, he is a neutral player, and that's a huge step up. And yeah, his contract's still bad, but it's moving in the right direction right now. And that's, if you get that out of year one with this regime, that's a positive.
And as someone who always roots for the underdog type of player, you know, I'm really happy that at least he's at least starting to show that kind of upward momentum, because I was high on him out of Kansas, honestly.
A lot of people were. I mean, he was the number 1 overall pick.
Yeah.
That you are not alone there. I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of people, his nickname was Maple Jordan. Like, he was supposed to be a great player, and it hasn't come into fruition yet.
Yeah, I just hate when people root. It sort of root against guys.
Sure.
You know, I like to see success stories, and I think he was sticking it to him there early in the season. I hope he gets back to that.
I think that if this team looks a little bit different in the second half of the season, we could see more of that version of Andrew Wiggins. But they have to figure out their backcourt, and that's been a struggle for them. And also the fact that he's typically surrounded by a bunch of non-shooters is why his assist numbers are low. The way he's playing, it looks like he's lost faith in some of his teammates offensively, and that's why I think he's passing a little bit less lately.
So is Cat, like, the only one who's consistent from three?
Cat's their best three-point shooter, and it's not close. I mean, he's a 40% three-point shooter for his career. Him missing the last couple of games with a knee injury, I think, is a reason why we can maybe pin some of their last couple of losses. Like, they probably beat New Orleans with Carl playing, and they probably beat Portland and probably Golden State as well. But when you're missing him and the effort isn't exactly as good as it can be, it's tough to win games, especially on the road.
And you got to remember, too, I mean, you're starting a guy, Josh Okogie, who's only in his second year, too.
Yeah.
Like that, so that's going to, you know, sophomore slumps are real.
Well,
so.
And he wasn't a good shooter last year, and he's still not a good shooter. And those things just affect how you can play offensively.
Yeah.
And then, so I do want to a little bit more of the Cavs. I want to also get into our five most interesting things from the NBA season so far that you and I both prepared. But I do want to talk Darius Garland, because I think that there are people in Minnesota that are interested in him, because there is some alternate reality out there where with the fifth pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Jarrett Culver, and Darius Garland would have like most likely been the guy that was selected at number six overall. At what point, what do you think his ceiling is as a player, Spencer?
So, at the draft, or not at the draft, at the introductory press conference with Darius Garland, talked to a league source very close to him, and he said he was a combination, his style of play is a combination of Lillard, Kyrie, and Chris Paul. So, there's the hybrid, okay.
That is putting lofty expectations on a 19-year-old.
Huge expectations, but that was around draft time, you know, all that stuff.
This is back in June.
Yes, this is back in June. This is before we even saw him back on a court. I think that you're starting to see the confidence come into him currently, because again, going back to playing with that second unit and then, you know, just having that confidence to make plays and not be afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. Which is a problem that a lot of rookies have. Sometimes they're hesitant. Like, he was very hesitant early in the season. Turned the ball over a ton, couldn't shoot worth a lick.
Yeah.
And then he got on this nice little stretch of shooting, came back down to earth a little bit, and then again, it's the ups and downs of being a rookie. I don't like putting ceilings or floors or whatever, just because I'm not huge on player comparisons. I'm just telling you what was told
sure.
to me. I just think that he can be a very cerebral player. He's able to read and react well. He is really good off the not off the bounce on the catch and shoots.
Yeah.
He did hit one off the bounce right in Trae Young's eye last night. That was filthy. By the way, solid defensive improvement from him over the last couple, playing Ja Morant and Trae Young back to back, both guys. Not that Trae Young struggled to the tune of whatever the hell amazing numbers he had last night, but they were, you know, kind of manufactured throughout the game and the pace it was played.
Yeah.
But he did a really nice job on Ja Morant, didn't let him get a shot off, had to force him to pass. But Darius, obviously, defensively isn't what he's going to be the best at. But he's going to develop into a good shooter. When he's feeling it, he's gonna take those shots.
Yeah.
He's not by any means a selfish player. Actually admitted that he had deferred in the starting lineup, which is maybe why Beeline decided to play him with the second unit guys and get him a little bit more aggressive. We also have to remember with Darius Garland, he's not just a 19-year-old. He's a 19-year-old that didn't play basketball for a whole year.
Yeah, five games at Vanderbilt is not exactly a huge sample size of college hoops.
And it was a knee injury,
yeah.
And when it's a knee injury and you don't play active basketball for so long, sure, he was playing some pickup in the summer. He missed the entire preseason. He was able to watch stuff in training camp, but he didn't really do much.
Yeah.
That is a huge factor. And getting back into the rhythm of who you are, this might be a dumb example, but look at Gordon Hayward. He looks finally like himself, and it took him damn near 1.5 years to get back to himself after an injury.
And that injury was quite a bit more devastating than Darius Garland.
Correct. But it's the point of it takes a little while for these guys to get their rhythm back.
Yeah.
He didn't have any rhythm earlier in the season. You could tell that he was a little gassed out there. You could see that he wasn't quite himself. He looks like he's getting back to himself, the version that was, you know, an amazing player in high school and one of the top recruits in the nation, the first-rated point guard in the 2019 draft class before that injury happened.
And along the lines of the injury, I do think that that's a part of the reason why he got off to such a slow start. And he was someone that I certainly was very high on coming out of the draft, coming out of Vanderbilt. I thought that he was going to be I thought he was going to be an all-star caliber guy at some point. Like, I don't know if he's a championship level player or what, but I thought that Darius Garland looks like he can be an all-star one day. That's what I saw out of him. And even after the slow start, I still do believe that out of him. I still think he is immensely talented, and he can shoot so well. That's what I think. If you always need to have, this is my philosophy, and I know a couple of other people around the league that I've talked to about the draft, is that no matter what, you have to have one NBA-ready skill when you come out. You have to be NBA good at one thing when you first get into the league, or you're not going to be successful, whether it's shooting, whether it's getting to the basket, whether it's defending, which is really difficult to do. You have to be NBA good at something, and I thought that that's what Garland's NBA good was going to be.
Can we flip this around a little bit and talk about Sexton? Because I just wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
Kind of got going on him early a little bit. So Colin Sexton is not exactly the same player that Darius is, and that's just fine. There are different player archetypes and different tendencies, and that's fine. Let's start with the good with Colin. I don't think anybody's catching up to that dude in transition when he's on a full burst of speed.
Very few.
Not many. Not
very,
many.
Very few.
Same goes for when, for example, last night, takes anybody one-on-one in a situation and can take them baseline and then get an easy layup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Two good things there. Defensively, to start the year at least, he was taking on a lot of tough opponents and doing a damn good job.
Yeah.
He might have regressed a little bit in that area, but he's taken some hard screens from some bigs, and that's just life in the NBA. We know that.
Mm-hmm. Especially for a guard his size.
Of course. Of course. Point number three, I think that he has improved with his vision little by little in this last couple weeks. The issue that everyone talks about with Colin Sexton is his tunnel vision, mm-hmm. and that's completely understandable because he does hurt himself in those situations.
Yeah.
Like at the first probably month and a half, dude was getting his shots blocked left and right. He was taking it way too close. So in order to counter that, this last stretch, he's been really focusing on that floater where he gets inside and gets it over the top. And he's really good at that. He's really good at that. He can get better with his shot selection, yes. He can pass the ball more, yes. But again, to the same point of Darius Garland, are we forgetting that this dude is 20 years old?
Yeah. I think that that's where it's easy to lose sight of during these rebuilds, because the same thing is going on with Jarrett Culver. He is just... I don't know if not good is the right way to describe him, but he's been incredibly underwhelming.
He's 19 too, right?
He's 20.
He's 20?
He was a two-year guy at Texas Tech.
Oh, that's right.
He's 20 years old, but he has just been incredibly underwhelming in the NBA so far. But I think that we need to remember that everyone develops at a different rate. Not everyone comes – like Luka Doncic is – as he came in and instantly was an all-star caliber guy, that doesn't happen. Paul George wasn't Paul George day one. Kawhi Leonard was not Kawhi Leonard for a long time. And I'm not making the point that, you know, these guys, these rookies that we're talking about or second-year players are going to turn into guys like those. But we also, I think, have to be a little bit more patient with how guys develop and grow over time.
And you got to look at who their teammates are and where they're at their point of their careers. I mean, shoot, the Cavs starting small forward is Jetty Osman.
Yeah.
He just got an extension in November, and it wasn't starter money.
No.
So maybe that's a look at maybe he's going to end up shifting to the bench. Like, these are the guys they're playing with in their first and second years. Like, that's not easy. Now, I know you have all-star like Kevin Love there,
mm-hmm.
okay? And Tristan Thompson's as consistent as it can get.
He's making an all-star case.
He is. The offense slowed down a little bit, but he's playing really good defense. Dude gets offensive rebounds like an animal, and he's become a very good vocal leader. Kevin is up and down, just because you can tell that he loses a little bit of sight of what's going on. And he's openly admitted that mm-hmm. sometimes on the floor he's not as focused as he should be, or he's not hustling as much as he should be because he gets frustrated. And that's you can see that sometimes on the floor.
Sure.
But, I mean, if that's going to happen when it's an all-star candidate, you know, on the back nine of his career and still thinks he has a lot to prove. But for the young guys specifically, you got to look at who they're playing with. You got to look at the positions they're being put in and the talent that they're facing. Remember, guys, this is the NBA. I don't care what of the 30 teams you're facing or the other 29 teams that you're facing. There's going to be NBA talent on that team somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's going to be sunshine and roses from the get-go. And I think with this pairing of Sexton and Garland, I don't know how long it's going to last. They can always revisit it down the line if it doesn't work now.
Sure.
especially if those two develop, you know, individually. But I think staggering them might be the best move at this point. And then just revisiting the Jordan Clarkson trade, I think that with Clarkson out of the picture, which obviously they hated to see him go because he's very integral to their development and just as a friend and as a good locker room guy.
Sure.
I think that that trade opens up more opportunities for Garland and Porter and even Sexton to really thrive because now they can take the reins over and now there's somebody not as ball dominant and as aggressive as Clarkson. And we saw that last night with the Hawks game where Garland and Porter were getting key fourth quarter minutes that they might not have gotten with Clarkson.
Who's the next veteran that gets dealt from the Cavs?
That gets dealt?
Yes. What is the next trade we see? Who is it going to be? Because the last night was just the start with Jordan Clarkson getting sent to Utah.
Most definitely.
We are going to see more trades in the NBA, and I'm really happy that trade happened last night because we hadn't had one since
July.
July 16th was the date that the Russell Westbrook Chris Paul trade became official.
You and I were in Vegas.
No, that was after.
Was it? Okay. I was going to say.
But it was okay. Well, nothing had happened for like 5 months, and I'm glad something finally did. But there's going to be more action that happens over the next couple of months, and it's going to involve Cleveland in some way, shape, or form. Who do you think has gone next?
So this one's difficult because they have so many guys on expirings that teams might be like, okay, let's say this. I'll tell you who's not going. I don't think that Tristan Thompson's going anywhere.
Okay.
I think that is a Cleveland Cavalier lifer at this point. The way that he speaks and the way he handles himself, the way he punches the clock in and does work. I don't think that Delly will be going just because of how much Beeline uses him in the second unit and as somebody to kind of be that on-the-court mentor.
I also don't know who wants Matthew Dellavedova.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Other teams want Tristan Thompson. There's no question about that.
Yes.
I don't know that Kobe Altman's phone is ringing off the hook because someone wants Matthew Dellavedova.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's another really important veteran locker room guy to have.
Sure.
Who's also been to the top as well.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would go ahead and say that the most value they have currently, I would go out, and this isn't saying that Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love's the obvious one, so I'm not going to go that route
yet. I don't think
yet.
He gets traded during the season.
That's a fair point, and we can revisit that.
Sure.
I think the current value at the highest right now is John Henson.
Okay. Why is that?
He is a expiring deal. I believe he's making somewhere around $8 to $9 million. Don't have it off the top of my head, but when he has come into games, he has impacted every single one of them. And this isn't just by the stat sheet. Okay, he is one of their top plus-minus guys. He is a rim protector. He is a shot alterer. Offensively, I think, has been the biggest surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very willing passer. They play through him in the middle, and they've got guards cutting to the basket. He's going over the top and looking for these guys. He's able to rim run really well, sets good screens, has a very nice hook shot, has an improved perimeter game. I think this is a guy that, if you're looking at contender, it's a rental. I know it's somebody who hasn't been able to stay healthy in his past and includes
this
year.
That's the biggest question mark there.
That includes this year, too. But if I'm a contender and I need a big, somebody who can help me just with size, play him 15 to 20 minutes a game, I think that's a perfect fit for somebody.
And his price is a lot easier to match money-wise. And that's what's going to complicate things a lot this trade season is not a lot of not a lot of teams necessarily are looking to have cap space next summer.
It's not the greatest
free agent class. Yep. Mm-hmm. There are currently, I think, 5 teams projected to have cap space. Cleveland is one of them. But no one's necessarily looking to get off bad money right now.
No.
And there aren't as many bad contracts as there once were. Yeah. So it makes it a little bit difficult to match. That's why I don't think Kevin Love gets traded, because who's going to come up with almost $30 million money coming back that wants to figure that out and give up an asset to get Kevin Love? I don't see that happening. So I do understand that. I'm also curious just what direction they're going to go. Whether re-signing Tristan Thompson is interesting to me.
I think that's the plan. I truly think that's the plan. I don't know if any other teams are vying for Tristan Thompson because he's going to command another decent contract.
Yeah.
And I don't know if teams are going to be willing to pay that. not going out and getting him as a rental, and then that might be possible. But again, like you talk about, matching money isn't easy.
No.
And he has somewhere, I think, around 18?
18.5.
Yes, somewhere around 18.5. So that's not an easy deal to match. You're going to have to give up assets, and you're going to have to give up somebody who can match that deal. That's not easy to do. So I don't see Tristan going anywhere. Like I said, I think John Henson has the top value at this moment. I think even though you just brought up that the free agent class isn't the best, I think Brandon Ingram and Bogdan Bogdanovic, screwed up my Bogdanovic. those two might be the top in the class right now.
I think Bogdanovic is going to end up somewhere else, and Ingram's going to get, the Pelicans are going to have to match anything that he signs.
Yeah, you'd think so, especially the way he's playing this year, averaging over 25 a game.
I'd be stunned if they don't match anything he signs.
Yeah, but going back to another potential piece that could be moved, Brandon Knight really hasn't seen time this year.
Yeah.
Now, that changes too, potentially, with Clarkson going. He did see somewhere around 11 to 12 minutes last night for the Cavs when they were shorthanded. I think Brandon Knight still has a lot left in the tank. He's only 28, 29 years old. He has a massive deal that teams have to match.
Yeah, he's at 15-6.
And again, that's massive for somebody who hasn't been able to stay on the court. I still think he has a lot to offer. He came into the season fresh. They were talking him up in training camp. Beeline was literally raving over his leadership in the locker room and during training camp. Knight said himself that he took this season to just take care of his body. He hadn't entered a season healthy in 2.5 years, and he's ready to go. He has the ability to operate in the pick and roll. He can shoot the three. We know that. He's a solid in attacking the basket and getting to the line. That's somebody that could also make a difference as a depth piece for a team, maybe possibly contending. And if you want to clear salary, that is something that you could do there too.
Yeah.
So those two, I think, would be the most apt to being traded here. Do you want to talk about Kevin Love a little bit more at length?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Because I think that it's wise for them to actually hang on to him during this season, just because I think if he can stay healthy, his value this summer, when there's really not what people want in free agency, is going to be something that's when it can pay off.
The only opposite side argument I have here is that this version of the NBA is, we entered as it was the most open it was possible to be a champion.
Yes.
Okay. The Golden State Warriors dynasty is over. The Cavs obviously were over 2 years ago. Kawhi Leonard went somewhere else. You know, this is the most open the league has been seen. If a team wants to go all in and say, all right, pushing all my chips to the middle, let's go for it this year because we don't know what happens next year. You know, Steph Curry comes back, Klay Thompson comes back, KD comes
Kevin
back
Durant
to the Nets.
Brooklyn, something that
we
certainly forget.
Then I see an argument that Kevin Love could be traded.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. And when I look at the teams and the salary situations, I saw like 3 to 5 teams who it would make sense for and the deals that they could put out there. Were there any in particular that you ever looked at that intrigued you?
Not necessarily, but I just think that a team that doesn't figure out a way to improve in free agency this year, Kevin Love is the next closest thing that you're going to have.
And
it's one less year on that contract. When this season's up, that contract looks a little more manageable.
And there were a couple of teams that weren't even contenders that I saw were rumored out there, and not even, don't know if they're baseless or not, but people mentioned Atlanta and Phoenix.
Phoenix could make sense. I don't know if Atlanta does, but I think Phoenix makes some sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody who can space the floor with DeAndre Ayton and, you know, kind of bring them along as their young growing team themselves. But I don't know if I see him getting traded. It was obviously more imminent at the time when those reports came out because the assumption was that Kevin Love was one of those three players that spoke out against John Beilein. I don't want to point fingers or anything like that. It would make sense because he's one of those veteran voices that might be growing frustrated.
Sure.
And if that was the case, I feel like there wouldn't have been a leak to Adrian Wojnarowski that they were listening to trade offers.
Yeah.
So I can't predict the future. I don't know. I still think he gets moved But if they don't, they don't, you know?
We'll certainly be interesting to see. All right, so prior to starting today, I gave you a little bit of homework. I told you to come up with some of your most interesting things about the NBA season so far, the five teams that have interested you the most or surprised you the most, whatever. It was a very broad outline of your assignment, so that's what I want to dive into. I did the same thing here for myself, but I'll start with you. Give me your number one surprise about the NBA season so far.
My number one surprise?
Or your number five. I don't care.
You know what? I will give you my number one surprise, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Okay. I don't have them on my list, so go on. What has been most surprising to you about OKC so far?
I think that when you lose superstars the caliber of a Russell Westbrook and a Paul George, and you're openly gaining assets, that makes you think, okay, here comes the rebuild. Instead, they have a veteran, Chris Paul, playing possibly his best basketball in 2 years.
Yeah, he has looked reinvigorated.
He looks sharp. He looks healthy and active. And he did play that way for the Rockets 2 years ago. Don't forget that. Rockets could have easily been in the finals if he didn't go down.
They will contend that they are a Chris Paul hamstring injury away from being in the finals, yes.
And they might not be wrong. But back to that, I think that CP3 has been absolutely tremendous this year. Just in manipulating the defenses, getting to his spots, that mid-range is looking great, the three's looking great. Bringing along a second-year guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who looks just absolutely, oh man, does it look like he was going to be the steal of that draft.
Yeah.
Which, you know, might make some Cavs fans cringe, but the length, the ability to get to the rim, the defense, that just looks like a home run trade for the Thunder there, getting him from the Clippers.
I'm really interested to see what they decide to do at the trade deadline, because Danilo Gallinari is probably one of the more valuable assets.
Most consistent scorer in the league. One of the most consistent scorers in the league.
Exactly. And the Thunder are a team that right now looks like a playoff team, but they also don't necessarily, they're not a team that can go win a title this year either.
No. And that's the unfortunate part about this, is everyone thinks you should be in the middle, on the top or at the bottom.
And not in the middle. And the Thunder are kind of sort of in the middle right now, although they're in the middle at the start of a rebuild, so that's why it's more interesting.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's the right move to abandon it. It might be because you got to sell high on your assets, and if you know that this isn't a championship contender, maybe you do, keep on that course, especially because you don't know if Dennis Schroeder is going to continue being this monster off the bench. Steven Adams, as consistent as any center in the league as well, really benefiting from playing with Chris Paul, somebody who's looking to get him the ball.
Yeah.
It's been really fun watching him. It's been fun watching Billy Donovan really kind of calm down the naysayers about his coaching prowess, especially, he comes over and takes over for the Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook days, and then he has to coach Russell Westbrook and Paul George. We always should have known that this guy has an elite mind in basketball.
The guy can coach.
Florida Gators wouldn't have renamed their basketball court after him if he wasn't somebody who was amazing at his job. I've completely been 180'd on that team. Completely 180'd. I came into the year thinking they were going to win less than 25 games. They're already 15-14.
Yeah, they've been really. They've surpassed, I think, just about everyone except for Kendrick Perkins' expectations. He was the one person that said they were a playoff team, and right now he looks spot on.
Shout out to Big Perk. That's my guy.
Yeah, he's been right about that one. So my number five is the leap that Dallas has taken. And not because I didn't believe in Luka, because I've gone on record. I think Luka Doncic is a future MVP of this league. Multiple times he's going to win MVP, I think. But I didn't know who their third best player was coming into the season. They didn't have that next guy. And I didn't know, is it going to be Tim Hardaway Jr.? Is it going to be Dwight Powell, DeLon Wright, Seth Curry? Like, who's going to step up and be that third best player? And it feels like all those guys have kind of stepped up and collectively been that third best player. And Kristaps Porzingis, after getting off to a really terrible start to the season, that was another thing that impressed me, is that they were winning these games and that was despite Porzingis just not really even being good.
Yeah, and you know what? Porzingis comes out as soon as Luka gets hurt, and I think it's five straight games of 20 or more.
And 10 boards, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Which is the longest streak in his career, which the scoring part hadn't been a problem for him. He wasn't always motivated to rebound.
Right, that's a good point. That's a very good point. I think his willingness, especially in this last stretch, to put the ball on the floor shows you that he's getting a little bit more confident, too. We can't forget that this guy's coming off of a really bad injury as well.
Yeah.
So that also could have played a factor into it. I think that's a really good point by you that it's been a collective effort for whoever it is that night to give him that scoring as the third man, so to speak. Tim Hardaway Jr. just went bonkers as soon as Luka Doncic went down.
Yeah.
He can just show you how you know, he's obviously a streaky guy, but he can show you that he can drop 30 at any time that he wants to. I'm a little disappointed that they haven't used Seth Curry in the way that I thought they would.
I do really like Seth Curry. I was really impressed with him. The last time I watched Dallas was their game against Milwaukee. It was, I think, the first or the second game without Luka Doncic. They ended the Bucks' winning streak. I do come away, just about every time I watch him, I do come away like more and more impressed with him. I think that he is, it took him a while to develop into a legitimate NBA player, but I think he is legitimately good now. And I don't know how long it took me to start saying that, but it feels like every time I watch him, he's a little bit better.
Yes, yes. I would agree with you. I think his best years came with Portland.
Certainly, yeah.
Those are really good to watch him.
I think they miss him this year.
Yeah, we could talk about the Blazers anytime, too, from here. But sticking on Dallas, I think a guy, their defense, honestly, is better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And a much in part to a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber. I was on this train for the last 2 years when I would watch this team. Maxi would come in for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and he wasn't the main guy to pay attention to, but I always like seeing what guys, their niche is.
Yeah.
You know, his is verticality, mm-hmm, on the defensive end.
Yeah.
You go inside, this dude's going to go straight up and you might score, but if you don't, you're not getting a foul called.
Yeah. Cause he's going straight up.
He is so good at that. I love that about Max Kleber. Finney Smith, I think in his third year now, a really nice length, a good tertiary guy. Somebody who can knock down a three when he wants to, but really on the defensive end, somebody who takes those really tough assignments and makes those big plays for you down the stretch is what I notice most about him.
All right, give me your next one.
All right, let's switch over to bad here. The Detroit Pistons.
I also have Detroit here. That's good. The thing about Detroit, I just don't know if Blake Griffin's ever going to be Blake Griffin again.
It's sad. Because when I saw him start his renaissance in Los Angeles, coming back from the injury, it was the start of the 2017-18 season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I loved watching him play. Because before that, I was in the same crowd as anybody who disliked his game. He's way too much of a bully. He gets, you know, like way too,
he puts
his head down.
He was an athlete, not a basketball player.
Yeah, he put his head down, got into the paint, and, you know, sometimes it didn't work. You know, somebody who was only a dunker, who really didn't bring anything else to the table, like an outside shot or somebody who's able to work in the pick and roll.
Yeah.
That took a 180 after the last injury he had in Los Angeles. So he starts the season out in Los Angeles, and he looked amazing. He was hitting step-back threes. He was really getting his teammates involved as a playmaker. The assist numbers went up. Still getting the rebounds. Might have lost a little bit of the athleticism. Can't get it up as high as he would be able to when he was obviously, you know, rookie, second-year guy.
He's not jumping over cars anymore.
He's not jumping over cars anymore, exactly. You know, and then you know, he goes to Detroit, and that was what they were going to preach, was him and Drummond as the future. Okay. You think maybe the spacing wouldn't be as great there.
Yeah.
But it looked like it worked. It looked like it worked. Last year especially, I thought there was a lot of flashes of that. Two-man game that was just absolutely devastating. You would get out-rebounded every single night. But he took over a lot of that role of playing that point forward and looked phenomenal. this year he gets bit by the injury bug again. You know, he's been in and out of the lineup, and when he's been in, he struggled to shoot out of the gate. When he came back, it wasn't nearly as good as it's been. Jumping off of Griffin, you know, someone like Reggie Jackson, who also has had injury issues, had probably the best year of his career in a long time last season. I was very happy to see that.
Yeah.
But then he comes in and he has a back injury this year, and he still hasn't been, you know, gotten back to the team, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know where Detroit goes from here. I don't know what they're going to do, because they're a franchise that does care about making the playoffs. They want to be in the playoffs, and they haven't won a playoff game since I think the first time LeBron was in Cleveland, but they want to be in the playoffs.
And they were last year, and they got smoked.
And they did not win a game.
Yep.
And the time before that, I think, was 2016, and they got swept by the Cavs in the first round. And before that, might have been 2009, and they got swept by the Cavs in the first round. Like, that's just what it is. They want to make the playoffs, but they have not won a playoff game since it feels like I was in grade school. I just don't know what they're going to do, because they're winning some games right now because Derrick Rose has been great in fourth quarters.
Yes, sir.
That's not something that's going to last. Derrick Rose, it's not going to last. His body is just going to break down again, because that's what we've seen time and time again. And it stinks because he's really talented, but that's just what history tells us is going to happen. So I just don't know where Detroit's going to be able to go from here.
I think that there's a nice little glimmer of light here with Luke Kennard, though.
Okay.
He's become one of the better, you know, off-screen shooters. He's a leaner, but he shoots off balance, and he just knocks them down.
Yeah,
he's more than a shooter too. He could put it on the floor, get others involved, and he's only in his second year as well. I think a guy like Bruce Brown, he's kind of been put in a position where he hasn't been in. They had him play a lot of point guard this year, but he is a lockdown defender. I think he showed that his ability to score a lot more this year. Another second year guy.
Yeah.
I kind of like Bruce Brown as this brute guard type. When it comes to a guy like Markieff Morris, I think he's been very underwhelming this year. You know, rather underwhelming in his career, honestly. No disrespect, especially when you see what his brother Marcus is doing in New York right now. Well, probably one of the top candidates on the trade market at the moment.
Someone's going to trade for him for sure.
But at least Detroit has shooters on this roster. They just got to start knocking them down.
Yep.
And I think that you can trust what Dwayne Casey brings to the table as a head coach of the year 2 years ago. We all know that. I think they're still going to make the playoffs this year.
Oof.
But it's just not looking good at the moment.
All right. My next one is the Toronto Raptors. Defending NBA champions.
You want to talk about me being a dunce?
I thought that they were going to be like the four, five, six seed, but I didn't think that they'd look like they look. I didn't think Pascal Siakam would look like maybe not a fringe MVP candidate, but an all-NBA player. I didn't think that Fred VanVleet would look like a guy that's going to be making $25 million a year when his contract is up this summer. I didn't think that those things would happen. I thought they would still be good, but they've been way better than I thought they could be.
You want to hear how much of an idiot I am?
You picked them to miss the playoffs, didn't you?
I picked them to miss the playoffs.
I did not do that.
You want to know what my logic was?
That Kawhi Leonard was gone?
Not that.
That would have been sound.
I had a feeling that they were going to start hot. Okay?
Which they did.
And then things were going to go south after a hot start. And then they would ship off some of their assets. A guy like Marc Gasol or Kyle Lowry. Serge Ibaka. Those guys that are on those one-year deals. But then that all changed. My prediction got killed because Lowry got an extension.
Yep.
They have been a joy to watch. I didn't know that Nick Nurse was as good as a coach as he was. I thought that he got lucky with Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green being on his team in addition to what they had.
I thought that what he did in the playoffs last year was phenomenal coaching-wise. I thought that he thoroughly out-coached Mike Budenholzer in that conference final series. I mean, I don't trust Bud in the playoffs regardless. I don't think he's a good playoff coach. He has not shown us that he is ever in all of his playoff experiences.
Stay tuned.
I don't believe in them this year. But he thoroughly out-coached Mike Budenholzer last year. Thoroughly.
The only bad thing that Nick Nurse did was try to call that timeout in that wrong spot in the finals. That's it.
Yeah.
That's literally it. So I just completely whiffed on that one. As you said, Pascal Siakam, and it's unfortunate that he's hurt right now.
Yeah.
But he had been, he just runs the floor so nicely. It's like, he's like Giannis. His archetype is like Giannis. I hate player comps, but when I watch him run the floor and dunk the ball and find guys, he's a better shooter. Not that Giannis isn't improving as a shooter, because he really is. That performance against the Lakers was great. But that's what I see. And I hate saying that he's Giannis, but that's, I think their games are very similar.
Sure.
Fred VanVleet, again, somebody who's been kind of in and out because he's been hurt, but my God.
He's been really good when he's been in.
How good is he?
Yeah.
He is so, and as someone for his size, that's somebody who Colin Sexton said he studied over the summer. He studied Fred VanVleet.
Should be, yeah.
And Kyle Lowry. And speaking of Lowry, what a last couple of games he's had.
Yep.
That roaring comeback against the Mavericks.
Down by 30 against Dallas in the
third
quarter.
Oh, my goodness. And they've been battling the injury bug, too. I mean, Norman Powell, someone who was playing his best basketball of his career, just going down with injury the other day. They've had to do a lot of, you know, mixed matching because of these injuries. I mean, you can just go down the list here. Someone like Chris Boucher, a G League guy last year from Oregon, coming up and making a huge impact in meaningful minutes. That's the aspect of player development, folks, and why championship teams do it.
I mean, there is no better case of player development than Siakam. He is the all-time player development. Like, that is
the poster boy
for it. That is the biggest win of player development that I can think of. All right, your next team.
That's a good call. All right, next team. Let's go with the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay. I do not have Charlotte on my list.
Okay. I have them on the good side. I know that they've been slumping here, and that's probably just a little bit more of a regression to the mean, but similar to the Thunder, I'm an idiot. But at the same time, I can't call myself as much as an idiot this, because who saw Devontae Graham averaging 19 points a game and shooting over 40%
from
three? No
one did. I thought Charlotte was going to win 19 games this year.
I had them as the worst team in the league, if you want me to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I had as well. I thought that the Terry Rozier contract was a huge mistake. I just thought that team was missing a lot of NBA talent.
That's fair.
And they've looked certainly much better than anyone really anticipated.
Yeah, yeah. And it's most in part due to a guy like Devontae Graham, who has a couple of 30-plus point games, one 40-point game in there.
Yeah.
Somebody who's been clutch. I know that there's some fans over there that I interacted with when they came to Cleveland last Wednesday, and calling him a chucker. I don't necessarily think he's a chucker. He gets guys involved. I think he averages over 6-7 assists, something like that. And you got to understand with, again, a second-year guy, somebody who's going to have his ups and downs, if you're seeing this kind of potential in a guy like this, I don't see what there is to abandon. He's a little older than most second-year guys. He's 25 years old.
Yeah.
But he's been electrifying to watch. I've loved every second of Devontae Graham that I've seen in those primetime moments that he's come up.
He's averaging 7.5 assists per game.
There you go.
Shooting a shade under 16 attempts per game.
There you go.
That is fine. That is exactly where you want to be, really.
And what was he averaging last year? Like 2 points a game, and he played, what, 30 games?
He played 46 games, averaged 4.7 points per game, just under 15 minutes a night.
He barely saw time.
Yeah.
He barely saw time. So to another case of player development, somebody comes in and just puts the work in, and boom, you got yourself a 20 points per game guy. PJ Washington, he's been hurt here and there.
He broke his hand, I think, right?
Finger
or something.
It's something like that. But he was awesome to watch out of the gate, and hopefully he gets healthy sometime soon. Really picks his spots well and defends and brings a different dynamic to them. It's interesting to me, this team, because they have so many pieces that they've got a weird roster.
Yes.
It's simple as that, man. I mean, they're starting Bismack Biyombo. They have guys that they pinned as their future on the bench, like Michael Kilchrist.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're starting to see what he is, unfortunately. You got the savvy vet, Marvin Williams, which God, what a good guy, man. He's somebody who stuck around from the jump. He was the number three pick, number two pick in the 2005 draft.
Still doing it.
Still going. He might not have been worth where he was drafted, but damn it, he was reliable to stay healthy and play the rest of his career. Looking towards the future for that team, Miles Bridges, he needs to be a little bit more consistent, but I think you see the flashes with him as well. He's a brute, man. I love the way that he gets to the hole.
Yeah.
Loved his game at Michigan State because of that. He's a built guy. He might not be that tall. Improved three-point shooter. He's still on his growth. A guy like Malik Monk, who I'm planning to do a story on when they come in the next time. He's been inconsistent because his playing time, sometimes he gets DNPs, another night he might get 25 minutes.
Yeah, and that's a really tough thing to balance.
Oh, my goodness, is it. But he showed flashes. He had a double-double the night before they came to play Cleveland. 23 points, 10 rebounds. When he's in attack mode, I really like him. He was, I think, eighth pick, something like that, out of Kentucky, and a lot of people thought he was going to be really good, and his learning curve has taken a little bit longer than we expected. You mentioned Terry Rozier. We know he can go out and drop 30 any night he wants to, but is it going to be on 20 shots?
Yeah.
That's
the thing with him.
That's the type of player he is, though. Like, watching him in that fourth quarter against the Cavs, just, I think he dropped 20 or something.
Well,
and he
had a three at the buzzer to tie it, and that was a really good
rolled
look
out.
That he couldn't knock down.
Yep. And it should have gone in, honestly. It was that close. But when he gets into that mode where he's just, all right, I'm taking the shot. I'm getting mine. I'm getting my 20 shots a game.
Yeah.
It hurts you a little. It hurts you a little.
Yeah,
which is probably why you should stagger him. And then last note on the Hornets. Cody Zeller, I think, was one of the most underappreciated players in the NBA.
Okay.
I saw him set in these bone-crushing screens on these young guards for the Cavs. And just watching him, the ability to run the floor, make those mid-rangers and really play some solid defense. I think he's one of the more underappreciated players in the NBA.
All right, up next for me, I've got the Indiana Pacers. I thought that Indiana, because we didn't know what the timeline for Victor Oladipo was going to be, and we still kind of don't in terms of when he's going to come back, I thought that they would be a team that was going to make the playoffs. But I thought that they were going to be like the 7 or 8 seed and like sneak in because just what they had, I didn't think, okay, well, nothing about them overwhelms me. But at the same time, they just don't have any bad players that they play. Like, part of the problem with so many NBA players, and I've talked about this on previous episodes here, is there are just teams that play bad players. And the Wolves right now are one of them. That part of the reason they're not good is they don't have enough players that just aren't bad. And the Pacers have no one that's bad that plays. And that's why I think they're good.
It's a good point. I mean, you can't. Sometimes teams are put in bad positions because they have to showcase trade value.
Sure.
You know, any type of circumstances that coaches are instructed. But sometimes they're just kind of making it harder on themselves.
Yeah.
With this Pacers team, it's funny that you say you thought they were going to be a playoff team, but not as good. I learned my lesson from that team 2 years ago when they took the Cavs to the brink.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson that Nate McMillan has a culture there that it's unbreakable to me. It's unbreakable to me. And I thought they might take a tiny step back when they lost Thaddeus Young, because Thaddeus Young was a big part of what they did, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
But then I see them bring in two very underrated signings, one being Jeremy Lamb and the other very big one being Malcolm Brogdon. When I saw them bring Brogdon in, I said, oh, they got a problem there now. And I mean a problem in a good way. They had lacked that consistent point guard play, I think, for that stretch with Darren Collison.
Yeah.
And that's no slight to Darren Collison. Darren Collison was getting older.
Who just and retired.
He was a three-point shooter. Obviously got other guys involved, but not a defensive player like Malcolm Brogdon. Not somebody who can operate in a pick and roll like Malcolm Brogdon. Did you watch him and Sabonis just tear apart those Lakers in the pick and roll situations?
Oh, yeah,
the other
night. That was a fun game to watch, and that's Malcolm Brogdon's the reason they won that game.
Oh my goodness, man. It's just so smooth. And the way that he is able to read and react to those situations, even in situations where he does use a screen and slip for Sabonis or Turner, he's able to make that split-second decision, okay, I'm going to take a shot because I've got a little bit of an opening, or I'm going to just dump it off to the guy who's rolling to the basket.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a thing of beauty. I just think he is one of the top pick-and-roll guys in the NBA, and I love watching him play. I think that Sabonis, first of all, he's a double-double guy every night. You can count on it. He's getting 10 and 10 easy.
He's really good.
Easy. I still don't know where I'm at with the fit in him and Miles Turner.
I think at some point they're going to, Miles Turner is going to get traded at some point. I don't know when that's going to be, but that fit will not last forever.
But then, again, looking at their offseason, when they retooled, they didn't rebuild, they retooled, bringing in a guy like TJ Warren, who a lot of people thought was good stats on bad team guy. No, he's averaging 18 points a game this year. That was one of my first interviews of the year. It's just something that he had to get out of the situation where he feels like there's more of a stability here, knows what minutes he's going to get. It's not a rebuilding situation, so he knows he's going to get his minutes, which he has, and he's shot a really good percentage. He's really thriving as that second or third guy, depending on what it has to be that night.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a good collection of players that they have. Off the bench, I think that Aaron Holiday has really taken a step up this year. Last night, the 23rd, I should say, they didn't have Malcolm Brogdon, and Aaron Holiday stepped up, made a lot of clutch shots
really well
against the Raptors. And I know the Raptors were down guys. Both teams were coming off of back-to-back, but I mean, their player development has been really good. I think Alize Johnson is somebody you need to keep an eye on. He's in the G League right now, but it's a two-way guy for him. I like him a lot. Certainly someone like T.J. McConnell coming off the bench.
Yeah, he's an NBA player. Again, they just don't have guys that are bad.
Yeah.
That's why they're good, in my opinion, is because they just have no bad players.
Yeah.
All right, your last one.
Last one for me. Oh, you're going to make me choose. All right, I don't want to talk about bad, so let's do fun. Miami Heat.
That's who I head to. So go on with Miami. What's been most surprising to you about them? Because I thought that they would be good. Like, I thought that, okay, Miami can be a team that is, maybe they can get as high as a 3 seed. I thought that maybe they're a 3 or 4 seed. But I didn't think that they're a team that I could look at and say, you know what, I could realistically see a world in which they win the Eastern Conference.
Which surprise do you want me to talk about first? The undrafted rookie averaging 20 points a game? At Kendrick Nunn? Or do you want me to talk about Duncan Robinson being a 45-46% three-point shooter on a nightly basis?
It is up to you. I got to see them in person the first week of the season, and that was actually one of the Wolves' wins. Jimmy Butler, that was when he had his child that week, so he was not with the team. But Kendrick Nunn has been really impressive to me. That's an incredible find. I was a big Tyler Hero fan coming out of the draft, too. He was someone I thought the Wolves, if they had stuck at 11, I thought that's someone they should have taken there. But I'm also really impressed with the coaching job Eric Spoelstra's done too.
I mean, Spo's been an amazing coach.
One of the best.
The entire time of his tenure in the NBA so far. By the way, I was a little off base on Kendrick Nunn. He was averaging 20 earlier in the season. He's averaging 16 now. But
yeah, he's taken a bit of a step back lately.
But he's able to score in bunches and really play that team game and be that attacker. I'll tell you something that isn't surprising to me. And this is one of my preseason predictions that I feel like I might get correct. I had Bam Adebayo as my most improved player preseason, and he's making me look smart.
I don't know that he's going to win it. I don't think he would win it. I can think of a couple people I would vote ahead of him.
That's fair.
But he's been really, really good. Now, I think that he's always been really good. He just hasn't maybe received the recognition that he's receiving now.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Last year, he started really showing those chops of being able to be a playmaker.
Yeah.
It's almost like, so you know how I said Pascal plays like Giannis more nowadays? Yeah. I think Bam's starting to play like Pascal did when he started to find his groove.
And that's who I think Pascal Siakam's the most improved player again.
That's fair. That's fair. Again, I'm not going to argue that. I'm just saying he's a contention. But the explosiveness that Bam has, I love, and even since Kentucky, as an interior player, just how he finishes these alley-oops and the way that he's able to really shoot the basketball with confidence especially from that elbow area, and even sometimes in the mid-range. It's really nice. I think that him and Jimmy have just established this rapport with each other. And kudos to Jimmy Butler, because I didn't know dude was going to kind of just fly in the... I mean, you got to give credit to the young Miami players.
Yeah.
But you are also seeing that Jimmy Butler is making them better.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think, I don't know if anyone thought that he could do that on his own team.
I didn't know how young players would respond to him. I think that that's been the perfect culture for him. I think a lot of those guys really fit into that Heat culture that organization is so proud of having. I think it's really been a perfect fit for everyone involved so far.
He's the guy that they go to down the stretch, but you can see during the games, he's not looking to score to open the game.
No.
He's saying, oh, here's Duncan Robinson in the corner. Here's Bam on a roll to the rim. Oh, here's Tyler Hero here sitting over wide open. Like, I didn't see that from Jimmy before this. Yeah. I didn't see him being kind of like a de facto point guard, to tell you the truth, because they haven't started a point guard.
He had to be at times in Philadelphia down in crunch time, because Ben Simmons can't be a crunch time point guard, unfortunately, because he can't shoot. So that has happened before, but not with this much regularity, I don't think.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I've legitimately enjoyed watching their competitive spirit. Getting Hassan Whiteside out of town might have benefited him a little bit. They're able to space the floor a little bit more. Bam's playing that five, and then you have Myers Leonard pretty much as your guy next to Adebayo there in the lineup. But their bench even is really nice. I mean, Dragons missed quite a few games, but when he's been in the game, Goran Dragic, if you don't know who I'm talking about, he is perfect off of that bench role, and he was more than willing to accept that coming into it, because I think he thought he would be behind Justice Winslow. Justice Winslow's been hurt the whole year.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same to go with a guy who hasn't seen any playing time, James Johnson, who is one of those contracts they're looking to openly move. Same with Deion Waiters, who goes and takes a vacation on his boat while telling the team he's sick.
He is done in the NBA, I think. I would be surprised if Deion Waiters plays again.
I always root for Deion, but that's just a personal thing.
you're not alone in Cleveland with that, I don't think.
Even a guy like Derrick Jones Jr., airplane mode. I love watching this dude play. Defensively, he's so long. He causes havoc.
It's a big reason turnovers. They were able to beat Philadelphia, because they could use him at the top of that zone, and that was a big reason why they won in Philly.
He's not just an athletic marvel, and he is an athletic marvel. Did you see him end Rudy Gobert last night?
I did not see that.
Oh, no. My gosh. Dude skied right over him, two-hand flush. It wasn't even a poster. He literally threw the ball in the basket.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God. I love watching him dunk on the fast breaks and stuff like that, but he's more than that. Like, he is a very good player in the role that they ask him to play. So the Heat, I've just loved watching them this year. They're just fun to watch, and you can tell that they're enjoying it.
Yes.
And my favorite part about this, they asked Jimmy Butler, are you happy with your record? He said, no, I think we should have won more games. And that's the attitude you need to have.
Yeah, can make the case that he's right. But Spencer, really appreciate you taking the time to come down here, chat with me about this. It's been a lot of fun, and I am sure we'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on, and happy holidays to you and to our listeners.
Yes, thank you. You too.